our former mothers, all sentient beings who are as limitless as space need to be brought to the unlimited level of freedom from suffering, the ultimate state of Buddhahood. And so it is for that purpose that we practice the Dharma. And in order to practice the Dharma, we first have to study the Dharma. So thinking in this way, develop the attitude of bodhicitta as we listen to these teachings on the Dharma. And the Dharma that we are teaching and listening to today is the noble aspiration for excellent conduct. So to begin with, thank you all for coming. I'm glad to see all of you here. One of the reasons why I translated this again is it feels to me like sometimes in American Buddhism, we are a little bit limited in our aspirations. We don't have a large number of aspirations that we chant regularly. And when we think about aspirations, often our aspirations, we think, oh, okay, we need to make aspirations that are like heartfelt, that are our own aspirations, you know, that really mean something to us. But because we are ordinary individuals and we have somewhat limited view of things, often our aspirations become somewhat limited as a result, or there's the danger that they could be. As Rinpoche said the other day, this is why there's such blessings to recite the great aspirations that were made by the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas of the past. They have a real vast view, and so it's really good to think about them. And you don't have to think about it as, oh, I'm reciting that Buddha's aspiration. What you can do is, as you recite these aspirations, you can think, I'm going to make this aspiration my own. Samantabhadra made this aspiration, Subhuti made this aspiration, the Buddha made this aspiration, and just as they made this aspiration, I could make this aspiration too. And so if you please approach these aspirations with that attitude, then it will be of great benefit, I think, and help us open up and have a broader view than sometimes I think. We're just ordinary people, of course, so it's natural that we would sometimes be a little bit limited. And so what I'd like to do is I'd like to spend a few minutes explaining the meaning of this. I received some teachings on this from the Gyalwang Karmapa last year during the Kagyu Munlam. He called all the translators together and gave us special teachings on this particular aspiration prayer. So I want to share those with you. Also, when I then later went and retranslated this, I looked at the commentaries from the Sanskrit that have been preserved in the Tibetan Tengyurta, as well as several Tibetan commentaries. And so the reason I'm saying this is I'm just trying to let you know that I'm going to try not to make anything up. I'm just going to try to say what the great masters of the past and present say about this prayer. And so explanation of this prayer, the noble aspiration for excellent conduct, this comes from the last chapter of the Gandavyuha Sutra, or in Tibetan it's called the Palpoche, the sort of the majority sutra, which I'm not sure exactly, I haven't figured out the best way to translate this into English, although someone talked about, one scholar mentioned it as meaning like the best of all the qualities, the greatest qualities. This sutra relates the story of Subhuti, who goes to all sorts of different spiritual teachers, but always finds their teachings lacking until he meets Samantabhadra. And Samantabhadra taught him this prayer, and through this prayer he realized that this was the ultimate dharma, the dharma that he needed to study and to practice. And so this is the prayer that Samantabhadra taught Subhuti, and then that the Buddha related in the sutra. So when you talk about the prayer, the noble aspiration for excellent conduct, well, what is excellent conduct? Excellent conduct, the word excellent refers to the conduct of a bodhisattva. And the conduct here means the conduct of the practice of the six paramitas that is motivated by bodhicitta. So having bodhicitta and doing practices of the six paramitas of generosity, discipline, patience, diligence. Here I'm getting a test: jhana or meditative concentration, and prajna. So these are the six of paramitas. And so this is the aspiration that it's making, an aspiration to be able to do this conduct, to fulfill this conduct, and through it come to awakening. And so This prayer generally has sort of three different sections. I mean, the prayer, the aspiration prayer, it's called an aspiration prayer. It's also a lot like a dedication. In fact, the only distinction between a dedication and an aspiration prayer is that a dedication you have, like some piece of merit, something good that you've done that you're then dedicating to other people. Aspirations, you don't necessarily have that merit that you first done. You're just making a great aspiration. They're both are very powerful things to do. So this is both an aspiration. It can be an aspiration. It can be a dedication. But even when you do it as an aspiration, it's also a dedication because a lot of it is involved with dedicating the merit. And so if we're going to have merit to dedicate, we have to have merit to dedicate. And so the best way to do that, according to the sutras of the Mahayana, is to do a seven-branch offering. And so this begins with a seven-branch offering. That's the first 12 verses. Then following that, there is a long section of specific dedications and aspirations, many of which are fairly easy to understand. And then there is a section that talks about the benefits of reciting and making these aspirations. And then there is a section talking about the result of doing this. So the first section is the seven-branch prayer, and I'm sure many of you have heard about seven-branch prayers before, like the offering, prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting the Buddha to turn the wheel of Dharma, supplicating the Buddha to stay and not pass into Nirvana, and then the dedication. So it starts out with these in the first 12 verses. And the first four verses are the prostration. And actually, the Gyalon Karmapa gave some really lovely explanations, so I'm going to go into these in a little bit more detail, and the rest in kind of skimming over it a bit. With the prostrations, the very first verse, I prostrate to all lions among humans, as many as appear, accepting none, in the three times and worlds of 10 directions, sincerely with my body, speech, and mind, is a general prostration with body, speech, and mind to the Buddhas, the lions among humans. The lions because they're fearless, and among humans because the Buddhas were born among humans. And then following that, we have the three verses which are prostrating with our body, speech, and mind. So the second verse, with the power of this prayer for excellent conduct, I fully prostrate to all victors with as many bodies as atoms in all realms, with all the victors right before my mind. This is a prostration with body. So we imagine that we and all sentient beings are prostrating through the power of this prayer and excellent conduct. So the excellent conduct is, as I just mentioned, the excellent conduct is the conduct of a bodhisattva that is the practice of the six paramitas motivated by bodhicitta. And the reason we call it excellent is because it's like the best. You know, when you have the conduct of ordinary beings, when ordinary beings do virtuous things that lead to that would lead to good karmic results, such as birth in the higher realms, that is very good, but it's not as excellent. Or when you have the conduct of those who are pursuing the foundation vehicle path, who are pursuing their own liberation, that is also very good. That is also excellent, but it is not as excellent as the conduct of the bodhisattva. So the excellent here means that there's nothing wrong with it. There are no problems with it, no faults at all, and there is nothing. It is not lower in comparison to anything else. And so we imagine here, as you do this, recite this verse, imagine that you're prostrating with an incountable number of bodies. You're prostrating to all of the Buddhas of all the three times. And all the victors, or the Buddhas, are present right before our mind. So present right before the mind means we don't actually see all the Buddhas. There are an infinite number of Buddhas, but we don't see them now, right? But the Buddhas have their eye of wisdom, and with their eye of wisdom, they can perceive us. And so it's just as if they were directly in front of us. And so in this way, even if we can't see them with our fleshly eye, then they're still present. They're still there and able to see us. And so we can think of ourselves prostrating with many millions of bodies. Then upon one atom are as many Buddhas as atoms in the midst of bodhisattvas, I thus imagine that victorious ones completely fill the entire Dharma expanse. This is prostrating with our minds. And so prostrating with the mind, when we think about prostrating with the mind, it says here, upon one atom, so like we're imagining that all the Buddhas are in front of us, and so like on one atom in the Buddha's body in front of us, like there are an uncountable number of Buddhas, which seems kind of strange, you know, like one little atom, and you've got an infinite number of Buddhas on one little atom. How can that be? Well, as the Gaon Karmapa said, it's like if you have a mustard seed, a little tiny mustard seed, 100 people can look at that mustard seed, right? And all of us can see it. Our minds can all engage that mustard seed, right? Our minds are not obstructive of one of each other. It's not like, you know, wait a minute, you got to stop looking at that mustard seed so that my mind can get in there and look at it. It doesn't work that way, right? The minds can all go right together. Well, the bodies and speech and mind of the Buddha are all the essence of wisdom, so there's nothing obstructive about them at all. And that is how they can all be on every single atom in all the Buddhas that we're imagining. And they're on all the atoms that fill the entire Dharma expanse, that fill the entire universe, all of space. And so we imagine that there are all of the Buddhas there. And so we're prostrating with our mind. Here what prostrating means is that we are, let me get these words right. Yeah, so that we can come to understand the great secret requesting the possibility of understanding the great secret. The great secret maybe is the same as the secret awareness that Mipham Rinpoche talks about. And then the next verse is the prostration of the speech. With the sounds from oceans of melodious traits, I extol the qualities of all the victors, whose oceans of praiseworthiness will never run dry, and praise all of the Sugatas. And so here, the Gaon Karmapa said the way you should visualize this is like you should visualize that you and all beings each have 1,000 heads. And each of your 1,000 heads has 1,000 mouths. It's kind of hard to get your mind around this, but if Avalokiteshvara can have 1,000 arms and 1,000 eyes, you can have countless heads, and each head have countless mouths. And with each of these mouths, you're singing the praises of the Buddha. So that's the prostration with our speech. And then following that, prostrating, then we have what? Offering, right? And the offering, there are two types of offering. There are the surpassable and the unsurpassable offerings. We have two verses that teach the surpassable offerings, the best of flowers and the finest garlands, symbols and ointments, the best parasols, and so forth. These are all offerings, imagining that we're making offerings of the best of everything in this world, the flowers that are pleasing to the five senses. They are beautiful to look at. They have nice scent. When the wind blows through the petals, they make lovely sound. When you eat them, they're delicious, and they have a lovely scent too. And so all of these things, thinking about the best of offering, think that you're making the highest and best offerings to all of these Buddhas. And it's the same with all of these. And here when it says the ointments, did I say ointments? Symbols and ointments. Ointments here, in India is a very hot country, and so there are ointments that you can rub on your chest that will cool you down. So that's why ointments is in there. The finest fragrances are like fragrances you put in hot water to release a nice fragrance. And yet they're also delicious to drink. So those are the surpassable offerings. And then the unsurpassable offerings, I also imagining offering to all victors that which is vast and unsurpassable. And so this is the offering that comes out of the power of the Bodhisattva's samadhi. So the Bodhisattvas, Manjushri and Samantabhadra, make vast offerings to the Buddha, emanating them all out of every single pore of their body. So it's the power that, the offerings that come from the power of that. And so that's the sort of offerings that we are offering. Next is the confession. Under the influence of desire, hatred, and ignorance, I have committed wrongs, using my body, speech, and also mind, I confess each and every one of them. And so here, we should confess, of course, the specific wrongs that we've done. If you've done something like killing a man, or killing a human, or killing a dog, then of course you should confess it. But what in particular we need to confess are those things that we've done that have violated any vows we have taken. Those are the most serious type of downfall, so we should confess those in particular. And here, we don't necessarily remember every misdeed that we've done. And so it says, under the power of greed, desire, hatred, and ignorance. And so here, all of the misdeeds that we do, they're under the power of the afflictions. Under the afflictions, we've got the three main poisons: desire, hatred, and ignorance, right? Well, ignorance is like the boss, because ignorance is always with everything that we do, but the greed and desire are like his henchmen, right? So you've got greed, because every negative thing, every misdeed you do comes out of either greed or hatred, and so greed and hatred are like the henchmen, and ignorance is like the boss. So this includes all of our misdeeds. And then the rejoicing. The rejoicing, we should just rejoice from our heart in everything that anyone has done. of all the victors and the Buddhist children. The Buddhist children here, these are the bodhisattvas. They're called the Buddhist children because they're born out of the Buddhist power, and because in comparison to the Buddha, they're like little kids. When we look at a bodhisattva seems like some great, wonderful being, right? But in comparison to a Buddha, it's said that with like a 10th level bodhisattva, when an ordinary being views a 10th level bodhisattva, we can't distinguish them from a Buddha. But in comparison to the qualities of a 10th level bodhisattva, in comparison to those of the Buddha, are like those in the like the puddle in the hoof print of a cow compared to the entire ocean. And so that is why they're called the Buddha's children. Self-Buddhist here is another translation for solitary realizers, Pratyeka Buddhas. They awaken on their own power. They don't have a teacher in their last lifetime, but awaken either assembling, congregating in groups of 500, or on their own they awaken to Buddha, to their own enlightenment. So of all the beings, we rejoice in all their merit. And then we request the Buddhas, and I'm running short on time, I'm going to go a little bit quicker, I think, than I have been. I'm sorry, we have to get through the whole singing too thing. We've got the singing thing, so. And we've only got 45 minutes. So we want to be done, so you'll have to be able to go to the bathroom before Rinpoche comes. Requesting...
Does it have to be a one-shot deal? Yeah, why do we have to rush? Couldn't we do this another day as well?
We'll see what we get to. Well, that'll keep that in mind, okay? And I'm going to try to get through. I'll try to do a brief version today, and if we feel like there's more later, we'll do more later. How's that? Okay. So then, the requesting, actually making requests for Buddhas to stay is the best way in the sutras to gain long life for ourselves. Requesting the Buddhas to stay, but of course the Buddhas can't stay, because if the Buddhas always stayed permanently, then we'd always have the idea. We think, you know, the Buddha's always around. He's like never passing into nirvana. The Buddha could do that if the Buddha wanted to. But if the Buddha did that, then we'd always think, you know, I can go tomorrow. He's there tomorrow. We wouldn't do anything today. So to remind us of the preciousness of the impermanence, then there's that. Then there is the... I skipped the supplication to turn the wheel of Dharma. I think that's pretty easy to understand, I hope. Well, then the dedication of all of these merits. So these first 12 verses are the seven branch prayer. You can do these in any practice you want to do where there's a set. Well, okay, shouldn't say that. In a lot of practices, there's a seven branch prayer, and they often use this same seven branch prayer. Sometimes, like in the Tibetan, it'll just give the first line and then dot, 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 essentially. Then everyone knows that they just go through these 12 verses. So anytime you feel like making a seven-branch offering, you can just go through these. And then in the following verses, I just wanted to touch on a few words and terms that I think not all of you might know or have heard before. The first one would be on page 8, the first verse on page 8. There's the cycling through all existences, may I gain merit and wisdom inexhaustible, and be a bottomless store of all means, prajna, samadhi, emancipations. And good traits. Okay, everything I think but emancipations might be clear. Emancipations are particular types of meditation. They're called emancipations because it's like freeing us from a particular problem. So that's what the emancipations are. And that comes up also at the end of the third verse of on page 9, the emancipation of illusions. That's a particular type of meditation that bodhisattvas practice. And then I also wanted, Rinpoche has mentioned the benefits a couple times. He's talked about how at the end of this prayer there are benefits. He mentioned this the other day, if you remember. Those are mentioned on page 13, beginning at the top of page 13. Though one might give the realms of 10 directions adorned with precious jewelry to the victors, and so forth. And so here it's saying that if you just read and memorize, or if you hear this King of Dedications once and develop faith and feel a longing for supreme enlightenment, that is the most supreme exalted merit. So you might wonder, well, how is it that just hearing this once might be a greater merit than making huge offerings for eons upon eons? And the reason is that if you make those offerings without the attitude of bodhicitta, then they just end up bringing you to rebirth in a higher realm, which is good, but it's impermanent. It's not going to last, and you're going to fall to a lower realm. But the result of making this king of aspirations is that you will awaken to Buddhahood. And so that is why this is the more supreme exalted merit. So that is that. Then the other verses that are worth mentioning are the top of page 15. The brave Manjushri knows things as they are, as does in the same way as Amantabhadra. I fully dedicate all of these virtues that I might train and follow their example. This is one of the most favorite dedications of all in all of Tibetan Buddhism. You know how we also do the Sunam Di all the time? You can also do this one all the time. In Shambhala, everyone's saying, by this merit may all attain omniscience. That's a great dedication, but you don't always have to do the same one. You can also do this one. This is a great dedication to do at any time. Or you can do both, even better, eh? So those are the dedications that we have to do. Now, another thing that I thought on page 16, the first verse, it says, I also will receive a prophecy directly from the victor Amitabha. What prophecy is this? This is the prophecy of when you're going to awaken to enlightenment, what your name will be, what your pure realm will be like. So that's the particular prophecy that is meant there. The prophecy. The prophecy is the prophecy of your name, the name that you will have when you awaken to Buddhahood, the type of realm, the type of retinue that you will have at that time. That is the particular prophecy. So this is part of being reborn in the realm, pure realm, the blissful realm of Sukhavati. This is what happens. Amitabha gives you the prophecy of when it is that you will awaken to Buddhahood. So that's my brief explanation. Very brief, I guess, of this sutra. There are two verses I wanted to make a particular comment of for my own part on. If you look on page 7, the third verse on page 7. First verse on page 7. Sorry, I got wrong note. All right. Always may I associate those who act in harmony with my own conduct. In body, speech, and mind may we behave as one in conduct and in aspirations. This is, I think, really important for us American Buddhists. We hear a lot about politics happening in centers, people doing things that rub each other the wrong way. And we're all ordinary individuals. It happens. And what's really important is that we actually all really need to get along. It's very important. It's the most important thing we can do to help our teachers have long life. If we are helping on some dharma thing, we get mad at someone and yell at them, we have just destroyed all of the merit that we have done. We have lost it all. So it is incredibly important that we practice patience and that we get along with each other. You may be 100% right, but it's not ever right to yell at anyone, especially in a dharma context. It is. You may be 200% right, but it's often better to let that go and just let it be as it is. It's never right to do that. We must get along in dharma contexts. Rinpoche said to me the other day that the atmosphere is really important. And the atmosphere is created by us all trying to get along and work together. So there are so many sanghas that have had incredible difficulties because of people not getting along and not willing to try to see each other. And the most important thing we can do is to get along in these contexts. In Trangu Monastery in India, Nepal, we're well known among the other monasteries as being one where everyone really gets along well. And so I especially hope that in this particular, in our Trangu Sangha here, that we can also do the same. That's enough for now. Let's sing. But I have to have a glass of water first. So this is a kind of long prayer. So we have to have a melody that we can sing kind of quickly, because if we sort of draw it out over a long time, make something really operatic. I prostrate to all lions among humans, as many as appear in the three times. Then we're never going to finish. Right? So we got to have a kind of fast melody, sorry. I know sometimes people like to really think about the words, and if you have time, then you should sing at a leisurely tempo, but if you go too small, too slow, it'll take you hours. So, and also, some people sing better than others, and so I want something that everyone can sing. So I thought of a really, kind of simple little melody. It goes like this. I'll sing the first verse. I prostrate to all lions among humans, as many as appear, excepting none, in the three times and worlds of ten directions, sincerely with my body, speech, and mind. With the power of this prayer for excellent conduct, I fully prostrate to all victors, with as many bodies as atoms in all realms, with all the victors right before my mind. Simple enough, right? But, you know, Westerners like bridges, you know. You have the song, you've got to have that bridge on the third verse, so we got one here too. So the bridge, upon one atom are as many Buddhas as atoms in the midst of bodhisattvas. I thus imagine that victorious ones completely fill the entire Dharma expanse. Does that sound doable? All right, so just two verses, two A, one B, okay? Two verses through the main melody, then one on the bridge. Just keep doing the whole time. And when we recite this, after the 12th verse, that is the middle of page 4, requesting and for making supplications, we'll pause a little bit there. Retard on that last line. Requesting and for making supplications. And then you start again. And then the other place where you pause, this is where we pause when you do it in Tibetan, by the way, is after the first verse on page 10. And demonstrate Nirvana's final peace. Okay? Now we'll sing it all together. You've got 21 repetitions of this melody to get it into your mind. 63 verses, okay? But first, before we do it again, as Rinpoche always says, we're all ordinary beings, so it's quite possible that our motivation might have slipped or changed or something. So please, first, remember that by doing this, we're making a dedication for the action of a bodhisattva, for conduct. So please recite this now with the attitude of bodhisattva and try as much as you can to keep the meaning of the words in mind as well. And we'll do it not quite as quickly as I just did, but not too slow.